Hi there, my name's Willie Russo. Thanks for tuning in. You're listening to Interview with an Artist, where each week we profile an Australian artist, be they a sculptor, painter, drawer, weaver, someone working in the creative sphere. Jumping castles inspired by mental asylums. Industrial grade confetti blowers. Copyright infringement treasure hunts. These are not your typical accoutrement to the fine art world, and CJ Hendry is not your typical fine art world contender. A highly skilled, self-taught drawer of hyper-realistic images, Hendry knows there is a game to be played, and she's playing it by her own rules, selling direct to collectors and staging her own exhibitions that are more akin to experiential theatre. The business wheels behind Hendry's artistic endeavours turn smoothly. There's strategy, there's collector relations, there's secondary art market considerations. And as serious as this all sounds, the woman loves a laugh and seeing just how bonkers things can get. From selling her first piece about 7 or 8 years ago for around $10,000, a black and white drawing she did in her bedroom while living with her parents in Brisbane, to now living in New York and selling her pieces for hundreds of thousands of dollars to a global market. CJ Hendry has come a long way, and yet she knows there are many levels to the art world and she intends to climb them all. CJ joined me from her studio in New York for this week's interview with an artist, and we opened talking about her trip to Frankfurt earlier this year to the World Pens and Paper Fair. And warning, there's the odd F-bomb and S-word in here, so if you've got sensitive ears, you've been warned.
I'd love to have a little bit of a general chat to you just about, first of all, the paper and pencil fair. Was that awesome?
Honestly, I was blown away that so many people come to Frankfurt, of all places, but just it was like, I don't go to music festivals, but I'm assuming it was like a music festival, but just old people in suits doing like, looked like big mega deals over stationery. I was like, wow, there's a big business in this. Like, who would have thunk it? It was just like 8 football field sides. Like, you know, there was like little golf buggies taking people along the corridors. Like, it was huge. And just the food stands just to feed these masses of people. It was just unbelievable. I've never seen anything like it, to be honest.
And because you're looking at doing a pencil deal, aren't you? Is it Caran d'Ache?
Yeah, at the moment it's so strange. So I am actually I've only recently started working with Caran d'Ache, this particular Swiss pencil company. But I've been very upfront with them. I said, guys, thank you. Like, this is a great opportunity, but I am going to become your competitor very soon. And they're like, we don't mind. I think they think they're just such a big deal, and they are, I'm not going to lie. But they are very open to the fact that I'm going to start my own pencil line. They're not stressed in the slightest. Isn't that just amazing?
That is so amazing.
Isn't it? So anyway.
In July last year, you were saying that you thought a natural progression for you, or the next progression for you, would be to go to a gallery. Do you still feel that?
I do, because there are levels to the art world, and especially in New York. Well, it's not just New York, but when the higher up, or the more it's not about going higher up, the more time you spend in this world, there are certain benefits to working with a gallery at the highest level. Won't get into all of it, but I wouldn't go down that route if I didn't think it was beneficial to not just me, but to them as well. I think it's definitely where things might progress, but it's just dependent on which type of mega gallery. You know, I'm not interested in signing necessarily with like a smaller Australian gallery. There's they call them mega galleries, you know, in New York. They've got galleries all around the world, but they do have power play, and it takes things to a whole nother level. You know, like, people might think I'm at some type of level, but there's 100 levels above me. I'm still small time in the higher end art world, for sure. People might perceive where I'm at to be like, oh my god, you've made it. I'm like, I haven't even scratched the surface yet of what I could be capable of, you know. And that excites me a lot. That's why I'm like, oh god, you can't get too ahead of yourself here, because there's so many levels to this game, especially here in the States. Like, things happen at just monstrous scale.
It is just that, like, economy of scale, right? It's just a bigger market, bigger players, bigger budgets.
Yeah, and then it's not just the budgets, it's just the the cost of works that get sold and acquired and go on the secondary market and bought back and resold and all these different things, which I never talk about, but it's a very big part of my practice and something we strategize on. And yeah, it's just something that happens in the background, but I'll never publicize it, if that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. I heard you talk about your London show, and you've got 10 tons of flower petals, 4 industrial confetti blowers, 1 severely pimped up London church that you've rented, you don't own, that the Church of England is just going to love you for at the end of. Uh-huh. What's the update with that show?
We don't know. I think what's funny is like there's still been no announcement via, the UK or the US as to when things might start progressing. I think the economy is still in shutdown very much in the US, I'm assuming also in the UK. And I think when Boris maybe opens things up, when Trump kind of announces like, okay, planes will start flying in September, then maybe we can start planning that. But at the moment, no announcements have been made. They're kind of keeping their cards close to their chest. So I would love to do it this year, but I'm assuming it might be an early 2021 exhibition, maybe.
Are you rolling into mode for what would have been 2021, or are you kind of
so put it this way, the exhibition is done and paid for. Like, we've done the renovations, we've done everything, we've done the planning, we just need to execute it. And to be honest, the execution is the easiest part. The planning, the organizing, the preparation, the trial, the error, the back and forth, the a year of back and forth, that's the hard, expensive part. And just executing is just, you flick on a switch and off you go, So it's easy and it'll be really fun to do. But at the moment, I'm just working on a few custom pieces. And then I'd say in the next month or two, I've already got some ideas, but working toward a 2021 exhibition. I might have 2 big exhibitions next year just by happenstance, just accidentally.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When did you start calling yourself an artist?
I don't know. I just think you kind of have to. I mean, I still don't even say I am that. Like, when people are like, oh, what do you do? I'm like, oh, just a bit of this and that. You meet people for the first time because I hate getting into it. I hate, yes, I'm talking to you, but I really don't enjoy talking about myself. I'd like to learn what other people are up to, and I'm just more interested in what they have to say instead of rabbiting on about my own whatever's going on. So half the time I just say, oh, look, I've got multiple interests, and then I just leave it at that. And I'm like, oh, what do you do? And half the time no one remembers to ask again, and that suits me just fine. So I don't know, I'll say I'm an artist if it's an interview, but if I'm meeting people I've never met before, I just say I fluff around with a bit of this and that, I don't do a whole lot specific. I just do some things here and there, very vague.
Yeah, and everyone just remembers you as that kind of lovely Australian woman who kind of does, I'm not really sure what she does, but
what? I never got to that. So that's fine by me. I just don't enjoy talking about because it's quite complicated to explain as well. And it's like, oh, art, it's like, oh, what work do you do? You're like, oh, here we go, down the rabbit hole. And I just don't want to have to explain it.
And I think also for you as well, in particular, you're a businesswoman as well, right? So the art is the product, but you have a whole – you have a business and you have an operations team and you have strategy and marketing.
But you know what? I don't like to bog people down with I'm an up, but I also do this and that. I'm like, it's just an artist in general. And, I also think what's interesting about nowadays, so much has changed and is changing in that an artist now, I don't think needs to be this one, very linear thing. I think an artist can be a multi-dimensional creative person who can do lots of different things. And I think that's been shown not just through me, there's lots of other artists who actually do it way better than me, to be honest. And I think it's great that you can just be a creative person who happens to sell art. I think that's what I am. I'm not hecka creative. I'm really good at, sitting down drawing, but there's a lot more people who are more creative than me and whatever it might be. But yeah, just multi-platformed. There's lots of things that go on here and it's not just art. There's designing invitations and designing exhibitions and doing private dinners and all these wild things just are constantly happening.
Can you tell us about one of your favorite pieces that you've created?
Oh, Gosh, you know what? I don't like get too attached to anything. I'm not very sentimental, so I'm like very hard to buy presents for and all that. Like my husband Lewis complains so much. He's like, well, I just don't know what to get you. I'm like, well, just get me snacks because, like, you know, that'll keep me happy. So in terms of art, I don't really have a favorite. I go through phases. So like whatever I'm working on at that moment or that year is a favorite because I'm so obsessed with it that I'd build a whole exhibition around it. And then I don't move on, but I become interested in other things. So it's like I constantly move from being interested in different pieces, and maybe a favorite of mine from 5 years ago is not a favorite anymore, you know, because I'm constantly developing my ideas. And I always think my old ideas were shit as well. So I'm always like, oh, that one was shitty. And I really like this new idea that's coming up, and it might also be shit. So it's constantly changing. Oh.
You're like, what was I thinking back then?
I'm embarrassed. I'm like, oh my god, what was I thinking? Also, when it comes to interviews, I'm like, oh my god, what the fuck? Why did I say that? I put this back here. I'm like, don't listen to me. Don't ever listen to me. What are you talking about? What? No, I never said that. Like, I'm like, oh god. But it's always put my foot in it. But that's part of the fun of it. Like, I'm like, oh god, don't listen to me. Like, I'm not a lawyer, thank the Lord. You know, I'm just a really get around kind of playing games and just being an idiot. You know, it's not a big deal.
What do you do to get out of a creative funk?
You know, it sounds bizarre, but like I don't have creative funks per se because I never sit down on a Monday morning at 9 a.m. and think, right, I need to think of the thing now. It's never like a sit down, it must happen, create the thing. It's just when I'm drawing, I find it very meditative. So I find I come up with a lot of ideas and I do a lot of my thinking when I'm drawing, and I find it very calming, and I find my ideas are more rational and thought out. So I never really have funks. If it doesn't feel right, I'll move on to something else. You know, I never give myself hard targets to try and come up with. You know, I'm not also working for someone else. So if it doesn't feel right, I don't do it. I just kind of like always manipulate ideas and change and alter until something sticks, you know? It's weird.
No
answer to it. I think with funks, you just got to, I think for me, and I don't know if this works for everyone, but it's just about consistency. So I don't, you know, I don't come into the studio one day a week and pretend to work. Like, I'm here every day, and some days are more productive than others. Some I don't do any drawing. Some I do all drawing. Some I'm thinking, some I'm not. You know, so it's, you know, I think a culmination of the more I'm at the studio, the more I'm thinking, the more time I have to be able to come up with interesting ideas. You know, so it's just the more time you give to it, the better outcomes you get.
How do you know when a piece is done?
It's probably never done, but I think when the photograph says it's done, because I copy from a photograph, you know, I'm not whipping it out of my head. But yeah, I just kind of look at it and you just know. I work in sections. So if, you know, there's maybe 20, 30 different sections in an artwork, and once each section's done, I move on to the next one, and then I finish off with my final section, and then it's done.
Do you find yourself looking in terms of colour pencils now? Do you look at something and go, ooh, that's these colour pencils?
No, I don't actually, because I don't get scared by colour pencils. I just know how to manipulate the colours to get the colour I want with layering. I was very nervous at the beginning, but now you just kind of get used to it. And
who would you say is your biggest fan?
I don't know. I don't spend much time worrying about that or being that interested in that. You know, I think it's a combination of there's just so many fantastic people who have supported me in different ways, whether big or small, like it doesn't matter. I just think, you know, there's just so many different types of folks, whether it's people who buy my art or people who just give a double tap, or someone who doesn't even do that, someone who tells their mum, like it doesn't matter. I think there's always like different people who support in different ways.
And Lewis has been with you from like early drawing days, hasn't he?
Yes.
And so does he ever go, wow, that one was really awesome, or I can't believe that this one has been as successful as it is?
You know, this sounds really weird, and maybe we have a weird relationship. We don't really talk about my art or my practice that much. Like, you know, it's never like he doesn't dote on me in that way, and I would really feel very uncomfortable if that was the case. Like, we definitely wouldn't be together if that was the case. We just spend time talking about other things. Like, the art is just the thing that I make, and I don't lean into it. It's just the thing that happens. Also, Lewis has a really big startup business as well, so we we spent most of our time talking about that, to be perfectly honest, which is really interesting. And then talking about, we just bought a house, we were talking to the architects with renovations, which is really fun. So, yeah, we don't spend much time talking about my stuff unless I'm, like, really in a pickle and I'm like, it doesn't feel right. And then I'll, like, be nabbering in his ear in bed and he's like, oh, okay, let's sit up, let's go through it. Right, so this is what I'm thinking. It's not there. It's not there. And he's like, oh, well, we've got to go back. And he keeps encouraging me, but we don't, the whole, our lives are not revolved around my practice at all.
Yeah. Well, that's probably really healthy. That's probably really healthy.
Oh, my God. That would be so boring. Like, it's so self-indulgent too. Like, oh, that would just make me sick.
Who's your biggest critic? Are you pretty tough on yourself?
Yes, absolutely. And I think it's good to be tough on yourself because otherwise you get complacent. And then I think complacency breeds mediocrity. Yeah, and I just like, I think it's good to always be on your toes and never think that you've ever nailed it. You just got to keep wanting to do more and do it better and bigger.
Interestingly, so you've got your home now. Yeah. Are you starting to buy art and who's the last piece you've bought, if you are?
Ah, yes, we do actually buy art. Not necessarily from big established artists, although a few. I think the most recent one we bought was, it's also art that's so different from my work as well, which is crazy. So recently we bought this piece. It's like a spray painted cookie monster piece. It's so strange. It's by this artist called Katsu, and he does all these paintings with a drone, and they're just wild and messy and rough and gorgeous, and I just love that. I don't know why, I just love it. Yeah, so yeah, we buy from different artists here and there when there's pieces that are either funny or ironic or brilliant, you know, wherever kind of tweak our eye, we'll get it if we can.
And where are you looking for your art? Like, are you following artists on Instagram, or is there kind of an art scene in New York that you're tapped into?
Just literally on Instagram and through a gallery that I really like and respect, and he is represented by them, and yeah, I've just enjoyed his work for a while and like what he stands for, and yeah, he's just a bit like, I don't know what he looks like, but I know his work, you know. I don't know, he's kind of great.
If you could be hung in any museum, large gallery, institute around the world, and when I say institute, it doesn't necessarily need to be an art institute. It could be a really big business that you admire.
Yep.
Where would you love to see a big CJ Hendry?
I don't know. I really don't. I actually don't know the answer to that. There's so many wonderful institutions, and I'm sure I'll be there eventually. But it's of little to no interest right now. Like it's not my drive and focus, and I have no aspirations for it, although I'm sure it'll happen. But, oh, I just couldn't care less, honestly. It's the ultimate wank, you know. I'm like, fuck it. It's more fun doing it on my own. I just think the wanky things, it's just about hanging the art. I'm like, no. Oh, I think one day maybe a museum, you know, we're already in discussions, but it's just a very long process and I just work a little quicker. You know, I'm like, oh, God. But, you know, that's how they work. And it's, you know, it's long, slow, very planned and thought out. I'm like, it doesn't need to be this stringent, but whatever. I don't run them, so it's fine.
Feel like there's layers upon layers of, so then like there's the bureaucracy and there's the admin, right? But then there's like the art politics, which.
Totally. And there's so many probably board members who sit on the board of this museum and that, and they probably need to be like, oh, everyone needs to agree on, you know, I don't know. It's just a bit slow for me at the moment. Although we are, like I said, we're in discussions, but it's a lot. It's a couple of year long process to be able to make it happen.
Okay, so that's not aspirational for you, but I know you're quite strategic and I know you've often said you're playing the long game.
Yeah.
What is that long game?
So the long game, I think you touched on it is to kind of eventually move into working with bigger galleries and museums. But I also believe, and I really believe this, if you force it and you're desperate for it, it'll never happen. So the way I approach things is like, yes, that's a long goal and that would be great, but I'm just trying to make great work and produce museum-level exhibitions on my own. And then eventually we'll work together because we're all at the same level. Does that make sense? Like I'm not trying to,
Yeah.
Or con anyone's door to be like, guys, look at my work. I'm like, you know what? I just need to do the work. And when the time comes, it'll happen. Like, it will happen, I know. It's just when everyone's ready, you know, because I'm a little bit of an anomaly. Not everyone's ready for me. I get that. But, you know, it'll come. It'll come in a little bit of time. They've just got to be very ready for all the things that come along with whatever it is that I do.
Yeah. Interestingly, you have your collector's data.
Yeah.
Have you seen any patterns in terms of age, gender, nationality?
Do you know what's funny? Do you have all that, you know, collective information? But, you know, there's not one specific answer to that. We ship artworks all over the world. And it's really interesting that there's some very, very young collectors, like very young, almost like, what the how are you so young and buying these works? And then there's much more established collectors. And I think that's really interesting because it might have been some young kid on Instagram being like, hey, mum, look at this piece. And it might be their parents who end up buying it, or they might have read an article. You never quite know how people might become interested in your work. And you just kind of, once you've done the work, it's not your property anymore. You kind of put it out into the world and it is what it is. So you never really know how people come to be interested in what makes them actually think that they want to acquire a piece. But yeah, there's lots of different age groups. And yeah, we're quite shocked at how young some of the collectors are, which is just frightening. And yet, it's not specific to male or female at all. Just a big, yeah, big mix, really.
What age is one of your youngest?
22, and one of my biggest, like, private collect, like, not just editions, like big acquisition pieces, which is just, like, it's just amazing. And then another guy who's 28, he runs a startup, and he's young, and he's a very successful startup here in the US, and he is just I'm so fortunate that he's such a big supporter of my work, and he believes what I stand for and all that type of thing. And he's helping to fund some of the exhibitions that are coming up, you know. So it's so interesting in the ways that people want to get involved, and that's never happened before. Like, we never asked for that. We didn't even know how, you know, that he was interested to go that far. But yeah, he just so believes in what it is that's happening, you know. So it's just fascinating, the type, yeah, of invest. Well, I don't know if people are investing or just because they like it. And honestly, if they're investing, I'm like, probably don't invest in me. I'm a bit of a wild card, like, definitely not the right person to invest in me. I definitely suggest you try and find another artist. I just think I'm either going to crash and burn or make it to the top. You know, I've no interest in going in between. You know, like, that would be so boring.
Yeah.
It's kind of like, you're either going to make it big with me or we're all going to crash and burn. You know,
we're all going down in a ball of flames, and it will be an awesome ball of flames.
Exactly. So I just say to people, like, some people email, they're like, oh, you know, considering this is an investment. Elsa emails back being like, just don't. Like, but if you like the work, then go for it. If you believe in the work and what it stands for, and if you appreciate the craftsmanship, then yeah, this is the right artist for you. But if you're just doing it for investment, I wouldn't take the risk.
I went to a talk on investing in art. Yeah, the guy was basically like, it's like any investing, it's just gambling. Yes. With, you know.
Yes, because art is not stable in any way. So I think, yeah, exactly. Like, I would love to have actually been at, that would have been so interesting to listen to that. But I just believe that, like, you've got to like the work, and the investment should be a secondary thing. Although there are some people who do it for a living, which, oh God, that would be so scary to do.
He's obviously a very wealthy individual, and yeah, he's like, I run two streams of my art money. One of it is stuff I just buy because I love, and one of it is dedicated to investing. And he said, like any investment, I take advice from other experts in the field, yeah, about who they think is up and coming, how long I should hold the piece, how long I should sell the piece. He's like, I often buy pieces I don't necessarily like, but I'm told is a good investment. I'm prepared to lose that money. Like, I know that money may actually all just go down the drain.
Yeah. And that is so interesting that you say, because I think with investing in art, the reason I am a risky investment, because I don't have the backing from museums or galleries. And I think more stable artists to invest in are your big blue chip artists. No, you might not make as much on it, but they've got just such a retained value. Whereas because I am a wild card and just so risky, I'm just like, it's just not worth you getting into this. If If that's what people are doing it for, I would just say, oh God, don't. It's just, what a terrible idea, you know?
I've probably only been sort of looking at the art world closely for about 2 years now. And the more you delve into it, I mean, I think you said this in one podcast earlier, it's like the last Wild West frontier. There's no rules.
Yeah, it's brilliant for that reason. And I think the higher up you go, the scarier it does get, or it's perceived to get a little scarier. But there is more pressure. There are more eyeballs. There are more people investing and flipping your work, you know, and that's part of it. You know, you can't control it. It is what happens. And for me, all I do is focus on what's the next extraordinary thing I can do. You know, I never rest on the last thing. It's like, okay, what's the next interesting? And it's all, I always try and make it different as well. I don't want to be a one-trick pony where, you know, I can only draw, but the exhibitions are so multi-dimensional. So I really like to focus on that and, you know, create the storytelling around the exhibitions.
You did Luxury Goods, then the Rorschachs. This year it's kind of Death Through Flowers in a church.
Yep.
The topics seem to get a little deeper.
Yeah, don't they? God. But, you know, but it's funny, I'm not trying to become deeper. It's just what interests me a little bit. And I think the idea that I kind of am percolating at the moment is quite fun and playful and not at all serious. You know, and so maybe I just go through phases of just thinking more and internalizing more and then just being like, oh, fuck it, let's just do something fun. You know, so I just think it's like, it'd be so boring if it was like, oh, more and more serious. And then people are like, but you've lost the fun that was there at the beginning, you know? I think the topic that I might explore next is the opposite of dark.
It's okay.
Different. I mean, this is a maybe. I'm still not entirely sure what I'm doing yet, but I've been thinking about it for a while, and if I'm still obsessed with an idea for a while, then I'm like, maybe I should pursue it.
What would you say is the ratio of work of commissions to your planned exhibition work?
Oh, commissions are maybe like 2%. Like I don't...
Oh, okay.
I'll hand select a few each year, and I do find commissions very special because, you know, like for the commissions for this year, I hop on the phone with everyone and we'll chat through it. And I just want them to know that I'm pumped and I'm excited and it's like a collaborative piece, but it's not my main focus. But I do really enjoy doing them because it is fun working with someone else and kind of coming to a head with an idea. But mainly it's exhibition pieces and things I just want to make, you know, that's mainly what I do, which I'm very fortunate. Like that is such a privilege, you know. I know that's not how most people might work.
The treasure hunts,
yeah.
Are they going to become an annual thing?
I fucking hope so, but how the fuck do we drop boxes in September? We can't even leave the country. So,
oh, yes. Oh, my God, yes.
So we're going to have to think of some snazzy little way to drop red boxes. Also, more importantly, I need to think who I'm going to actually copyright infringe this year and not actually get sued. Like, the point's not to get sued, but if I do, I'm like, whoops. It's meant to be a bit skirting the line and a bit naughty. You know, so I just need to think of who I want to rip off this year, like which artist and, you know, who's going to see the fun, funny side.
Who's going to see the fun in it, yeah.
Exactly. Be careful. You don't want to go with anyone too serious because I'm just like, chill out. Like, this is funny. No one's making money. This is just funny. Chill out. Like,
it's so cool. Yeah. You know, your last drop that you did here in Australia, there was one box that was 50 metres from my husband's work.
Stop it.
And there was one box that was 50 metres from our house.
No.
So, and we missed both of them, right? And Sean was just like, oh, I cannot believe this.
Sean, what's he bloody good for? Ditch him. No. Yeah.
He even went to the guy. There was a box dropped in Neutral Bay, which was right near his work. Like, yeah. It was literally across the road from his work. And he went to the guy's door and was like, hey, mate, did you buy?
That is so funny. But no, I actually think I would be devastated if we couldn't do it. And I'm all about like, cool, okay, here's the problem. What's the solution? So I'm like, right, we will think of a way to drop boxes. It might be via Australia Post.
I was going to say, you need to, like, post us a box and I'll drop it somewhere for you.
100%. Or I'll get, like, my sister on.
Yes.
Because she's a great driver. Like, she's a great getaway driver. So we'll think of something, like a way to do these drops. Like, maybe you know, there's a crew in Australia doing it. We're doing it here in New York. Like, it, I think that we can get it done, you know, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If you could acquire any painting in the world, what would you acquire?
So it's actually not a painting, it's a sculpture. And it's by Mark Quinn, and I can't fucking remember the name of it, but it's this white, giant, super heavy steel or brass, I can't remember what it's made of, orchid, and it is so magnificent. It took my breath away so many years ago. I've always had it in my mind. I'm like, I will own it someday. And I've just, and flowers of all things, I really don't enjoy flowers, but this piece is just magnificent. I think the scale of it's quite extraordinary.
Yeah, I was just about to say to you, it's a flower and you don't like flowers. No,
but it's Mark Quinn and he's amazing. Or it'd be like an Anish Kapoor dome or like something. I just really enjoy sculpture and I don't make sculpture and I don't know how to make sculpture, but I really would go towards sculpture. I don't know why. What would you get?
I have a bit of a Frida love affair, but the hilarious thing is I love her story. I don't necessarily love her works.
Oh.
I went to the V&A Museum in London a couple of years ago and they had a sold-out exhibition and I was like, how do I get in? And they were like, well, you can become a member. I was like, done. So I just became a member to walk around and look at like Frida Kahlo clothes and...
How interesting. Yeah, her story is amazing. But yeah, I'm with you. I don't look at her work and think, oh, wow, I'd love to own that. But maybe that's why I enjoy some artists' work is because you get invested in the story and then sometimes it doesn't even matter about the piece. It's just what they stand for and what they believe in.
Yeah. I mean, that's exactly it for me with Frida Kahlo, like just the perseverance and the – she wasn't famous when she was alive. She didn't make money when she was alive, but she just did it.
Yeah.
I think that's really, really cool.
Yeah, there's a lot to admire in that. And I think, God, that's so inspiring. I'd love to, like, just live more like that, you know, just make the great thing.
But you are making the great thing. You are making a really great thing.
I am, but I think sometimes I want to create things at such a big scale. I can sometimes overwhelm myself with, for example, how much it might cost or, you know, because – and then I sometimes need to just scale it back. Often that's why Lewis is so good. He's like, it doesn't need to cost a lot. Often, and we often have these big discussions about like pieces and exhibitions and installations, which were so simple in their thought and the way it was thought out, but the execution was just on another level. So,
and then you CJ'd it.
Yeah, and then half the time I'm like, right, why am I thinking so big? Just think simple and you can scale up anything simple. And, you know, it's just about honing in on the most, sometimes the most simple concept, and you can make it big. And sometimes I can get a little overwhelmed with how big I want things to be.
I think it's really fantastic what you've done. I really have a whole lot of admiration for your work and your kind of vision that you've gone out and you've done all this. I think it's really awesome. And I am going to let you go after this, but I also do want to say, like, Kris Jenner, I admire her as well, because there's a certain level of brains and genius that goes into your daughter coming to you saying, oh my God, I've made a sex tape and it's on the internet.
I honestly, everyone talks about the cutout and like they laugh and talk down, and I'm secretly here being like, you are kidding. Like, Kris Jenner is the mastermind behind this whole fucking operation. If you know how when people are like, oh, who would you want to sit down with and have dinner? I'm like, Kris Jenner, one-on-one, that's all I want. Like, I just want to be like, one, go. Tell me everything. Like, day one, go. Like, I just need to see. It's genius on steroids. I cannot even explain it.
It's seeing an opportunity where most people would have just gone.
Yeah.
Like, would have crumbled, right? It's seeing an opportunity and it's a strength and it's a resilience and it's a capitalizing on a market and a society.
And also, she has built Kylie Jenner's lip kit whole empire, the billion-dollar empire. That is Kris Jenner behind that. Kim Kardashian's success is, you know, it's all Kris Jenner. And it's just, she's just, and you know what I find even more fascinating? And this is what gets me. She was already a mum of five. She had five kids. And then she, you know, she was just like a stay-at-home mum, you know, and then she built this mega empire in her, you know, late 40s, early 50s. And I just, I'm like,
yes,
you can start at any stage. Yes, they kind of were wealthy via, you know, the Kardashian father, but what has been built, oh, I don't know, what an amazing case study she would be. It's just amazing.
And they've got one of your works. Well, I guess they've got one of your works through Kanye up in there.
Yeah.
That's very cool.
Yeah, it is.
Thanks so much for your time. It's been really awesome.
Thank you. What great insightful questions you have. I can tell you really have either taken the time or really do understand a little bit more about what's going on. And I so appreciate that. It just makes for a more insightful conversation. So I appreciate that.
My pleasure. If you do need a Sydney box drop driver, hit me up.
Honestly, done and dusted. Like, you have to get your Formula One on, like, you know, get your race car driving skills on, my friend.